for the election of the chair, interim acting chair. I like the interim part of the chair. Having said that, we are all welcome, DM, as usual. We feel honored and humbled with your continuous standing attendance.
Your mic
is on. With that includes all of us as colleagues. I don't want to use the word officials, but colleagues better, and then honorable members. I think it makes me feel more comfortable in that way. Having said that, members, we do have few apologies. The Minister for Defence Aid, he's on leave until sometime next week, I think. There is a formal leave notice that we have received. And also, for DPME, we're not expecting anyone today. They will be joining us tomorrow in terms of the ministry. We've got an apology from Honorable Member Mente from EFF. An apology, I think she's attending other parliamentary business committee. We've got an apology from Honorable Nyami Boy, who's abroad. Honorable Dombela, he has just been admitted this morning, which he's going to have a knee operation. And Honorable Marvin Dex is sick. He has been sick for some time, but also now, what he says is that he has been hospitalized as well. With that, I'm not too sure if there are any other offenses that have moved from your side. Honorable Member?
Sorry, Chief. Would it be possible for the administration just to convey our wishes to those that are hospitalized and we wish them speedy recovery?
Thank you so very much.
I believe that it would be on behalf of the committee.
Definitely, it has to be on behalf of the committee. From your side, DA, are you only four or only we are five or two? There are no apologies. There's no new members. Because we need to make sure that the administration is aware that he or she gets invited as well. Thank you so much. That will bring us looking at the agenda. But what I was saying before we deal with that, with Mulelo, that there's another housekeeping matter that we have received an invite, members, honorable members, that invites greeting to the chair of the portfolio committee. Obviously, the interim acting chair. But however, what I would like to get from you is that can we get two other members that will accompany the chair? The invite is from CETA. Excuse me, I'm just searching to get the letter. Okay. It's CETA annual government care conference from the 8th to the 2nd of November in Johannesburg at Galaka Convention Center. So I was requesting so that we are putting it before the committee to ensure that if the chair attends, that if he or he attends, if it's she now, attend on behalf of the committee. However, I've requested through the administration that it might be a useful approach also to get other members if we wish so, if also the finances allow us. So we can agree in principle, then we'll check with the administration whether we do have funds to allow the members to go. Is that fine, members?
Yep.
Okay, but second time,
what were the dates?
The 3rd of October this month, which means it's month end, and to the 2nd. It's written here 3-0.
Okay.
I'm the only one who's got the invite.
You said 3rd.
Oh, it's 3rd.
Many times.
Can you add 0? 3-0 October 2016 and till the 2nd of November 2016.
We'll hear from you.
Honorable Madam, we are saying that DA saying they are going to come back to the administration, and I'm saying the ANC then, obviously, because there's no other political party for now, then we're giving you that responsibility to identify a second person, then we can be the interim acting chair.
Okay, can I nominate the committee?
No, there's no committee. We need another name chair. Madam, I'm not sure.
Honorable, my name is Thomas. Second of Thomas. Hoping that the meeting will be better.
Thank you, with your permission, can you just take a copy of the...
Yes, definitely, yes.
From the secretary, so that we...
No, it will be, but we wanted just to say to table it formally first.
I was just talking.
Okay, can I also request that we raise the hand so that it becomes a formal, not informal meeting? We could ask the chair also to just to...
I was saying I'm nominating the acting chair, which is my name, Thomas. Of course, I'm so sorry. The acting chair, and then honorable Mbembela. But instead of letting me give me, can we then nominate honorable Mbembela to...
Okay, honorable members, it's honorable Mzawu, subject to any changes, and honorable Dubazana and honorable Lesoma. Then we are set for that one. Thank you so much, honorable members. That will bring us to the actual business of the day. We are going to be receiving presentations from DPSA families. That will include the Public Service Commission, Center for Innovation, for Government Innovation, and also School of Governance, National School of Governance. And yes. Mr. DG, certain POF, I think the POF, or the POF. What we request from you as you will be taking us through the presentation, that all of us, our notice that we are dealing with the 2015-16 NDA report, we request that the approach that you will take is to deal with the highlights. Honorable members will recall in our last two meetings, going backwards, we received the first quarter report, and they did capture activities that have given us a sense of confidence that they have would have completed their outstanding previous month objectives of the 15-16 program, which we did ask them. Hence, I'm requesting them to focus on the highlights of 15-16. And also focus on the non-achieved, and also touch on the financial spending patterns, whether we are fine or not, with reasons. If there are anything that have been raised by Auditor General also that needs the attention of the committee, they have to talk to that. It's quite unfortunate that we should have received a presentation from the Treasury of the impact results. Unfortunately, they are also a little bit overstretched, but we'll be getting it, and I'm sure also the department would have engaged with the Treasury. If there are any areas of disagreement with the Treasury, they must highlight that and give us reasons why there are any disagreements with that. Honorable members, is that approach fine with us? Thank you so much. Honorable Mr. DG, thank you. And then the class will go through. This is the class.
Thank you.
Honorable, I agree with you, Honorable Matiwazan. The time is, according to my watch, we're just on time. And DJ, I do understand that you do have the program. Okay, we'll borrow you one so that you speak within the program. And please respect the time. This will assist us. Thank you. That will make you to have, I'm saving the 5 minutes I'll give you 15, just in case.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I might have to bring it closer to the honorable members of the committee, our Deputy Minister for Public Service and Administration, Honorable Brian Adolfo, Acting Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, and colleagues that are here today. I will follow the guidelines of the chairperson in terms of the way we'll approach the presentation, so it will be the highlight of the achievements for the 2015-2016 financial year. We will not be going through all the details, but we'll just be emphasizing a few areas here and there, and then we'll, in the process, also talk about the areas where we were not able to achieve the targets, and then talk about the financials. In terms of how we have performed and how we are doing at the moment. In the presentation, honorable members, just to indicate that the outline has a few details that is included, but at the end of the day, I think the focus will be more on those three broad areas that I have indicated. This is just the background in terms of the focus of the work of the department that is guided by our strategic plan as well as our annual operational plan, and that the annual report we are presenting today was tabled in the Parliament at the end of September. That the annual report year 2015-16 was tabled in Parliament at the end of September of this year. The vision and mission, I will not go into that. This is part of the information that was presented in the draft plan to the committee. The next couple of slides are just a reminder to the committee about the linkages between our annual performance plan and the national development plan and the medium-term strategic framework. So what it does, it goes to the NDP and it identifies an area in the NDP, and then it goes to the strategic plan of the department to show the specific activities in the strategic plan that speak to that NDP priority. This slide as well talks to the same issue, just showing the linkages between our work and the national development plan. And here, that's where we start to talk about the overall performance of the department. Just to emphasize on this slide that of the 46 planned targets for 2015-16, we were able to achieve 45 of them, and only one we were not able to achieve. I will speak to that in the presentation. Converted into percentage terms, it shows that it's a 98% achievement rate in terms of the target. What the slides that follow do is they start for each program, they show what the annual targets were, and then that's followed by a progress report on how we have performed against those targets. So this were pulled out from the strategic plan itself, but for program one, just to broadly indicate that we achieved all of the targets that we reflected were. And in terms of the highlights, perhaps just to emphasize two web here, one that we obtained a clean audit for the 2015-2016 financial year. It's quite an important achievement for the department. also just to emphasize that the issue that the committee monitors a lot around the payment of suppliers within 30 days, that for the financial year 15-16 we were able to pay all our suppliers within 30 days. The next problem is that of policy research and analysis, and the same approach is followed here. What you have first is just a repeat of the targets that we had for 15-16, after which then you have a breakdown of the progress that we were able to achieve in that particular program. I will indicate that this is a program where one, we are on the page one target that we were able to achieve, that target was under this APACIS program. The areas that we are flagging here, I will not go into the details, but perhaps just to emphasize from the presentation here that we were saying that we were going to focus on phased implementation of the Public Administration and Management Act. And the critical deliverable for us was to start developing the first set of regulations that will enable the implementation of the Public Administration and Management Act. And that first set of regulations focus on prohibiting public servants from doing business with the state. And by the end of the year, the target was to make sure that we have developed and submitted those regulations for the minister to consider them so that at a later stage that they can be used for public comment. That was achieved. And as the committee would know by now, they are actually in the public space now for consultation. Just to emphasize the deliverable on Tucson Service Centers, where the committee would be aware that we needed to focus on the development of a model, a governance model for Tucson Service Centers, including a funding model for Tucson Service Centers. That work was done as well. In fact, where we are now, I think it was indicated in the first quarter report of the committee that the matter is before cabinet for consideration. This is the target where we have reflected that the expectation was that we would have concluded the study and signed it off, but we had done, it was only in draft form by the end of the financial year, so we reflected in the structure there sheet, which is like the 1%, the 2% unachieved target in the annual report, where we're looking at accessibility to some service centers for members of communities to reach them and the distance norms that should be in place. That was not signed off by the end of the financial year, but where we are sitting now, it has been considered and signed off. And the matter will be for calculated. I think the other issues, with your permission, Chair, I will just pass them because it's part of the ongoing work that we do on the implementation of the Public Administration and Management Act. We have been evaluating norms and standards that exist so that we can make proposals on how we can close the gap that are there. Here we just show the details of which norms and standards we focus on and which departments were part of that evaluation process. Again, as part of strengthening evidence-based research-driven implementation of policies in the public service, we support the departments with toolkits that can help them with the design of policy briefs and so on. This slide just shows the toolkits that were put in place by the department. Allow me, Chair, just to reflect also on this slide, the work on provisioning of reasonable accommodation and assistive devices, that since the policy was put in place, we committed to ongoing monitoring of the policy. And this slide just shows the details of the outcome of the monitoring process. The useful thing here shows that the departments are using, particularly the one that focuses on assistive devices, and are identifying public servants with disabilities and purchasing assistive devices so that we can be able to function. Program 3, labor relations and human resource management. The slide just shows all the targets that we had for the year and that we follow them, and the slides that follow them just show a breakdown of the different areas of implementation here. Perhaps if I could just flag on this slide the two issues that we discussed with the committee before. The one relates to the graduate recruitment scheme that we spoke to the committee about in the first quarter progress report, that by the end of the financial year we had completed work around the research and proposals, and that during this financial year the focus is on getting approval from cabinet on which model should be presented. And of course the issue of youth, which is related to the committee for monitor and encourage departments to get youth into learning implementation programs in the public service. The target is 20,000 per annum, and we're just reporting on the progress that was made there. The financial year under review, it was 26,000 youth that were brought into the public service for that purpose. And then the other day is just part of ongoing work that we do in terms of our resolutions in the public service, coordinating budgeting councils and monitoring the implementation of the resolutions. And the last area that deals with labor relations or the government employees housing scheme, we have spoken to the committee about this before. At the end of the financial year, we show the kinds of things that have been done already, that we have already created a facility so that those public servants who qualify but do not have houses, the money then gets paid for them, so that when they are ready to get houses, they then can access the money to support them. And that we have a partnership with the public investment, the corporation PIC, to support the availing of homes together with the South African home loans. And the details there of each of these projects, including the government employees housing scheme, can be availed. But this is just at the end of March 2016. Obviously, there has been a lot more progress since then. I suppose when we get to the second quarter report in a month or two, the committee will share those details with the committee. The next one then is the government chief information officer showed the targets that we had. In fact, that all of them were achieved. Broadly speaking, it's assisting departments to leverage technology for service delivery. And the slides just show which departments we have worked with to assist in that process as was planned. And then a range of guidelines that we produce to assist departments with things such as security guidelines and so on, and the progress that was made in that regard. This is just further work around guidelines for departments and show the achievements there as well. Service delivery support, again, same approach. The annual targets that were identified and approved when we started the financial year, and we show that all of them were achieved. So the slides that follow just then show the breakdown of all these targets and the details thereof. Perhaps if I could just single out on this slide, especially because it's something the Auditor General has raised before, that departments need to focus on putting in place standard operating procedures. We developed toolkits to support departments, and here it just shows the progress we've made in terms of working with departments to make sure that they have standard operating procedures in place. The next slide talks about the ongoing work we do about service delivery improvement plans, because departments are supposed to have these plans in place. And we run workshops for departments, and we monitor the development and submission of these plans and report accordingly, and that information is contained in this slide. We further also assist departments when it comes to development of standards for them, and this just shows progress in terms of the departments we have worked with around the area of service delivery. And just like we do in research, we also do work on various tools that departments can use, such as just as we show in the slide there, the checklist for unannounced and announced visits, so that when they do inspections of service delivery sites, what templates can they use, what kind of reporting platforms can they use to ensure that there is consistency in the information that is generated within the public service to facilitate analysis. my slide here just shows the work that we have done around the African PSD mechanism. South Africa, like a number of other African countries, are part of this PSD mechanism. It's been assessed with the first generation review, and we're now preparing for a second generation review, and this is just a preparatory work that we embark on in the financial year for that purpose. Governance, public administration, the next program, once again, showing all the targets that were identified and approved for 2016-16 financial year, and also just to show that all of them were achieved. I will not go into all of them, but the members of the committee are aware of the things we've been saying about the issue of delegations in the public service, develop templates for departments to use to make it easier for them to do the delegations. And we've been running workshops for departments. It just shows the progress that was made. There has been a slow uptake, if you see the information that is there, but departments are moving in the right direction for this purpose. And this is just shows further delegations work that has been done in the public service and guidelines that were developed on mentorship and peer support for senior managers in the public service that was developed and then piloted in a few departments and provinces. Competency assessments as a requirement that for a member of official can be appointed at SMS level and if you can do competency assessment. There's just a report to show how we are doing in the public service. But there's been a little good uptake from public service because that is a requirement and we can go ahead with the appointment for this department. And then of course after the policy, the directive was introduced, which amongst others introduces minimum entry requirements for people at director level, around experience levels, around qualifications level. We ran a number of workshops with 24 departments to prepare them for the implementation of the directive. And that directive is being implemented at the moment, at least for national departments where all appointments for deputy director general and director general have to be tabled and cabinet by our minister. We see the implementation of the directive as it requires. We had indicated before that with the disclosure of the financial interest, there were manual disclosures, we introduced the e-disclosure in the past, but it was not mandatory. We were very pleased with the uptake in the public service that even when it was not mandatory, many public servants disclosed using the disclosure system. But what we did then was to make sure that we made it mandatory by amending Chapter 3 of the public service regulation, and that was achieved. And further work that relates to public servants doing business with the state, apart from that being covered in the Public Administration and Management Act, we have also built it into the revised public service regulation so that public servants are prohibited from doing business with the state, and we have issued templates for public servants and heads of departments to assist them in implementing this particular requirement. And then the last part there just focuses on our ongoing work to support departments on strengthening areas that have been identified as weaknesses through MPET. And we just indicate that we have developed a strategy to approve any ongoing work that we undertake to support initiatives with departments. We then report on some of the critical things that have been monitored in outcome 12, as well as the MPSS impact indicators. The report also monitor the average time of health department take in their post, both at national and provincial level. The figures are shown there that at national level, you are looking at 3.45 years, and at provincial level, we're looking at just over 2 years of the average of 2 years, 7 months for both national and provincial. And then, of course, the important issue of management, the average time it takes to solve disciplinary cases in the public service. The pivot that we are reporting on end of March 2016, it was 88 days. Normally, we are looking at 92. If you look at the other years where we started, the figure was very high. 2013, 14 was 190 days, 14, 15, 42 days. But obviously, it depends. Some departments are doing much better. Others are struggling a bit, but we continue to support them to improve the system. Honorable Chair, this just shows overall financial report for the financial year ending March 2016. This slide shows the figure for the whole board, which means that DPSA, the Public Service Commission, the Center for Public Service Innovation, National School of Government, so the overall budget there is 69.41, just over that, and the actual expenditure being 99.3%. And the next slide then just shows the breakdown of that figure according to the different programs we have. We start with DPSA, where the total shows that the spending was 98.5% on the extreme right column. And then the, what follows at the bottom there would be funds that were then transferred to the other entities. And we show that 100% of the money was transferred. But in terms of actual spending, it would be reporting money. Perhaps just to flag on this slide, Chair, that we have included the public sector education training for PCTA. This is the last time that we will be seeing in our financial report, because the committee did recommend earlier, a year or so ago, that because reporting lines are to higher education and training and not to this committee, that then you can't be housing their budget. Transfer and reporting lines of reporting numbers. So that has been approved, but it's just that for the financial year 2016, the budget was still transferred in the future. We're not seeing PCTA within our financial report. This slide just shows a breakdown by program, but it's the same information just organized differently from the previous slide. And the same information organized according to economic classification showing how much goes to compensation, salaries, goods and services, and transfers. But at the end of the day, the overall percentage is 99.3%, as shown in the previous slide. And we just once again show the breakdown here in terms of the money for the Department of Public Service and Administration as opposed to the overall budget vote. This slide is for information. So, because the committee been asking in the past to say what is the percentage of goods and services budget that you spend on consultants, and this slide just shows the percentage there that is just about 7%. So it's not a very huge amount, but perhaps just to emphasize that in terms of the Standard Chartered of Accounts, the classification there also includes payments. Things like payment of members of audit committee. And so it's not consultants as in service providers in that specific sense of the way, but the case can be all of those. And this just shows that information can be presented graphically in this slide. We've spoken about payment of suppliers within 30 days, that all of them were paid within 30 days for the financial year 2016. And we close off with this slide that focuses on human resource information and vacancy rate, number of filled posts, and so on, showing that at the end of the financial year, the vacancy rate for us was around 11%. how is the challenges obviously that are being faced by the rest of the public service, funding and so on and so on. We have been going through a review process so that we can reprioritize the post and be able to still function within the budget that has been updated to us. And that will apply to the public service as a whole. So this is just a statistic around the vacancy rate, the progress that we have made in terms of people with disabilities, that we were at 1.6%, just 0.4 short of the target of 2%, but something that we continue to work hard and towards achieving. An overall comment, Chair, if I could make, is that we are obviously experiencing the impact of the crisis like the rest of the public service. We are doing a number of things to make sure that a number of the critical priorities continue to be implemented. If you look at the government employees housing scheme, we had intended that we would move towards creating a specific institutional form that will take the implementation of the scheme forward. But given all these challenges, what we have done is we have established a program management office, which is just part of our establishment in this department, to make sure that to the extent possible we second people other than contract to make sure that the objectives of the scheme are not compromised. So the committee will see later in a month or 2 months time when we talk to them about the second quarter report performance information that actually the rollout of the scheme is happening and implementation is happening. And we are adopting that approach, the same approach with a number of the things that we are doing. Other things, I think it was just a useful coincidence that the cost-cutting measures also come at a time where we have been privileged to have new building that is starting to occupy. So for most of the workshops that we've run, we use external facilities. We then use the facilities that we have in the building, which also help with efficiencies and so on. With even our own meetings in the department, because the building we occupied before, we couldn't hold a meeting of all management within that building. We have to look at the place outside. But all of those are now things of the past because we're able to use facilities that we have much more efficiency and therefore still manage to drive the priorities that have been identified within the constraints of the cost-cutting measures that we're facing. I think in terms of the time of the meeting, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Just to remind you that we are dealing with B-triple-R. I'm not too sure whether I was not listening to you carefully. You also motivating for more money. What will happen if you don't get more money? What will happen if the money for your budget gets cut? But I'll leave it as that and allow members to engage on the presentation. Honorable members? Velma? Honorable Velma? I'll start at the end. Honorable Falmouth, please. Dazen? Dazen, yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. DG, it's always interesting to me what you don't say in an interview. Now, this is a parliamentary question. You know that in terms of the practice, of, may I say, I believe that the Department of Public Service and Administration should be a model institution showing the way for the rest of the public service. That in terms of the declaration of interests and business, private business with government, that this department has not been a model in that regard. If you could just comment on what went wrong, why is it that our senior managers did not comply as we expect of all senior managers in the public service? What's the position in that regard? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. A question, but first, I don't know whether I'm just being mean. I seem to detect a bit of dyslexia in the headings here. References to MTSF and then sometimes MSTF. So maybe that's part of the question really has to do with the impressive numbers that we always get about the department's effort to get young people into learnerships. I mean, that is obviously a commendable thing. My question is, what happens to them once they have got these learnerships? What happens to them? Do we have a sense of who gets employed, how many, and then we follow them up, or do how many end up in the department as employees of the department? Thank you.
Honorable Marek.
The issue is, actually, if you just can elaborate a little bit on the funding model that is actually been running for the Tucson Citizen League. And then on page 45, the average time to fill a post, 9+ months to fill a post. I know what you said about the changing departments and all of that, but 9.37 months. And it's increasing as from 2013, it was 6.54, and the target set was 6 months. That is actually quite serious. Thank you.
Another Kim.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson, and thank you to the department led by the Acting Minister Kozu. Maybe one needs to first acknowledge that we appreciate Deputy Minister that as a committee, if they said something, at least it has been done. There is quite a few that has been achieved by your department, and we really like to, because we can't be harsh to them, but I think where the achievement has been made, we need to acknowledge it constructively. The first committee, we requested a letter, including the Auditor General's comment that they must have the toolkit, which now we can see that with the financial year end 2015-2016, they were able to do that and that has achieved, and even the delegation, they were able to do it and that has achieved, so on their shoulders. We then say that the committee, I mean, they are filling up resources and we appreciate that. Now, I am not too sure, maybe some behind us, the signatures, we put some mandatory tasks really without measuring them scientifically. Taking for an example, I was just asking when the DG was saying, talking about the average time to fill a post, then it leads us to the 9.5, like what Honorable Marek said. For me, I'm asking myself, what is the average time? You know, what can you say is an acceptable average time? Because if you look at the professionals, you look at almost the last week when we're talking about the human resource, you can see that the senior management positions, those are scarce resources. The specialists, those are scarce resources. And because they are scarce resources, that might result affecting the criterion that we have set as a committee, the average time. Maybe we then need to ask ourselves, when we talk about the average time, what exactly are we saying as a committee? Are we applying this criterion across the board? I'm twisting our mind there as a committee, because indeed, for me, if you were to go and look for the cardiologist, where are you going to find a cardiologist? If you were to go and look for teachers for maths, where are you going to find them? Those are specialists. And as a result, the post then remains open. And what the treasury does is says, now you're not filling your post, so then it takes your money. So I think I don't know, we need to look at it carefully, the criterion, because this criterion comes from us, the committee, that they must be an average time, we can't have a cancer. So they're worried because if they're for the king post, then it means we're going to find queues in hospitals, we're going to find queues in service departments, we're going to find queues all over the show. And but to be there as our monitoring instrument, then it is deciding to come into our field. Thank you. Oh, then the last thing, it's a matter. planning. I'm sure that the people are going to get very worried about the environment. I think the department did try, you did quite well, coming from where you're coming from and to where you are today, as far as public financial management, you have actually improved. And they put on the services, it's my assumption, but we need a clarity from you. Where you are closing your books, you are sitting on 97.something% billion. It's my assumption, I need clarity. Was that because there were some other service providers that were not being paid, but you were forced by law to close your books? Because that might be the case, so you roll over them to the next financial year. And as a result, you see yourself sitting with a 6.6 million rand, which is not actually the underspending, but it is because of the reasons which we cannot get them clearly.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Lem. Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Hello, everyone. I'm just going to the HR issue. But firstly, in your presentation, slide 22, I take note that disability is at 1.1 point, it's different on my side, but 1.6, but the department, other departments are less than 2%, just that this department is. So I would like to know, what is the department doing to assist other departments to achieve the 2% and encourage them to increase the numbers? We would like them to go for more than 2%, but I'm just curious as to what the department is doing. Then reasonable accommodation, what is the department doing to assist more with reasonable accommodation? I also noticed that the amount is not enough there to give assistive devices towards reasonable accommodation. So what is the department doing in that respect? Then going to the annual report, unfortunately this was not given to us before the weekend, so to enable me to get more time to read it, but I will have more time to study it. But I would like to go to the annual report, page 91, under employment equity. I'm becoming a little bit worried because I noticed that the breakdown of equity is not there anymore, and instead they put that in brackets, which says that it includes disability. So I can't see the breakdown of how many disabled people there are, and I've been noticing it with other departments as well. So I'm worried that the breakdown is not there anymore. And why is it not there? So because I can't see the different levels of how many people with disabilities work there. I can't see that. Now, we saw the percentage that you gave us, but we can't see the breakdown. And in all the other pages as well. The same with skills development or promotion. Then I just see zeros, and some departments do have numbers, but some departments don't. It just says zero, and because they say it's all inclusive. So I'm just becoming worried that they're trying to hide or cover up the percentage or the number of people with disabilities in the breakdown. So I would just like to see to that, please.
Thank you, Honorable Velma. From my side, thank you, DG, for the presentation, and also to note for record purposes also, which is important, that we have managers DPSA to receive a clean audit report, isn't it? Is this a clean one? Is this an unqualified or clean, DG?
Yes.
A clean one. You see, when it's clean, it's clean. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mare. I think that's it. What gives me a sense of comfort is that also the clean audit, which is more linked to the financial standing, but also your predetermined objectives. You have done your level best also to achieve that. I would like to urge you, DG, also that we mustn't forget that also we're not DPSA looking. Also we're DPSA for all departments, government departments. So we must take care of those ones. I'm raising that because there are other departments that are not performing very well in terms of the the admin side as it may as expected. And I'm sure when we receive a report from a Public Service Commission also, it will talk to those other departments which are more on the areas that we highlighted as the portfolio committee that we must focus on in terms of, like, for an example, declaration of financial interest and so forth and all that, and also even the turnaround of filling of vacancies. I'm just preempting the highlights of the Public Service Commission. That is my comment. The other one, which I think we are not doing very well at DM. I think I must refer that one to your good staff, DM, that while the Public Service and Administration Department is trying its level best to do good in terms of performance of the admin, but we're not doing much in terms of communicating our achievements. And I don't know what makes us to shy away from that. And I'll edge, because public admin is seen as a soft back office work, whereas it's the one that makes the government tick. If it's on scratch, then people must know about that one, so that other departments they can account why are they not doing that in terms of the good administration as it may expect it, because you are trying your level best this time around also to lead by example. So I'm dealing with the issue of communication strategy that needs to be aggressive, more aggressive. The other one from my side, it would be a recommendation as well, linked to the people living with the disabilities, that we also probably DM, we need, if I say we, I mean the department, we need to have an public servants living with disabilities endeavor to communicate with them, because at nowhere I've heard that we have been engaging with them as one of our sector within the public service admin, so that the issues, it doesn't only become Honorable Verma that is a champion of their issues, but also as a caring department, we are paying attention when we do our interaction with the public service, that which we do. But I don't think also the sector, we should be seen also paying more attention to them. The first point that I made, DG, I'm sure you talked to that one. DM, I would like to give an opportunity before I refer it back to the DG and his team to comment, please. Oh, we'll start with the DG, then you'll be the last one. Thank you. Over to you, DG. DJ, I'm told your mic is not on.
Not
on. So which means we're not, oh, it's on.
Okay.
It's fine. Wait, it's the last model.
So, we there are things that we have done to address the situation. I mean, one of the things that certainly in PSA we have done, all the exposures and then move to the
submission to the Public Service Commission on time, then generate a report to the executive authority. So that's the level that you want the executive authority. Instead of the executive authority, you go into a disclosure of every single senior manager. You want somebody to do an overview, who has disclosed, what have they disclosed, what is missing, and so on, and what actions are we taking. And then you say to the executive authority, this is the report, so that where action needs to be taken, you can take it. So if you look at the disclosures for the current, this last round, because we've used that approach, we made sure that we submit to the Public Service Commission on time. I think what the kids need to call and show at a later stage, because they have not as yet reported on this latest round. But they will show a marked improvement in terms of that process. Because we'll try to address that limitation, which is about the last step. Not so much that public service themselves are not necessarily but they don't have the authority to submit directly to the Public Service Commission. If the report we're looking at disclosures by the end of May within the department, not by the end of May to the Commission, you will see a different thing. But that's just the challenge that we've had as a portfolio. I suspect that the other colleagues in the portfolio are experiencing the challenge as well. But it's a bit of a task in terms of the arrangement that we have made internally to this very difficult. The honourable now, you're not disturbing. Our apologies there in terms of the typing of the slide. But it is medium term strategic framework. I was just trying to check here because I know that during the first quarter progress report to the committee, we were giving details of the total number of interns. Learnership that we've had since this requirement was introduced and the total number of those who were affected the public service thing. I was just checking here, it's not reflecting the updated information. I'll therefore beg for indulgence that we just confirm that with the department so that we give the committee accurate information. But I think from my recollection of what we saw during the last quarterly report, that there are a number of these young people who come through the internship and learnership processes who end up being absorbed in one form or another in the public service. Obviously not all of them, because there are limitations in terms of compensation and employees budget in the public service. But there are a number of them and we will provide the statistics to the committee. The issue of the average time it takes to fill the post, I think it connects the issue raised by the Honourable Mare and the Honourable Tamini Zibazana around is it realistic? Should we be saying that when it takes 9 months or it takes 6 months, is it a problem or is it not a problem? We have been looking at an average of between 4 and 6 months. So within that range, it should happen. Obviously, the approach is to push the public service to do its best to make sure that those targets are achieved. We think that the regression in this case has been as a result of a number of factors. We can't rule out the issue of compensation, the cut in compensation to the budget, because departments have raised that when we interacted with them. But if you look at the question, also pull out the issue of restructuring in departments to say that sometimes when they change the executive authorities, they want to push the department, to drive the department to achieve the strategic objectives of government in a particular manner, and they want to make a few changes here and there. There is a process that must be followed, including concurrent with the Minister of Public Service and Administration, and that tends to delay the process. What we have done in our case is we have issued a new directive on OD in the public service. In terms of that directive, it speaks specifically to circumstances under which you can review the strategy. We call them the factors that can kickstart the need for a review of the organizational strategy, so that you don't end up in the process of constant restructuring in departments. actually when we made the person an offer, they said, no, it's not that good. So that it just then does delay the process. I'll with your permission, Chair, I'll ask the PFO to I'm done to talk about the just over 6 million in the questions that the planning board has asked. Some of the money is money that we could touch because it's reinvested for the remuneration commission. But the chief financial officer will speak to that. I mean, let me commit myself to go back to the issue that the honorable English state raised around issues relating to people with disabilities. I think we'll look at the numbers, especially to the extent that it affects reporting in other departments as well.
Mm.
That it might be the same thing. We'll look into that and advise accordingly. But I think I should just indicate, because the honorable member has asked about assistive devices as well, what is being done to assist departments. When that policy was developed on reasonable accommodation and assistance devices, it followed a recognition over a number of years. But although these targets are there, departments raised a number of concerns. But people with disabilities come in, they don't stay. But we're asking the question, well, why is that the case? And one of the reasons mentioned was that space itself, the workspace itself, is not supported enough. So this policy that we came up with talks about reasonable accommodation and assistive devices. And we are aware that the numbers reflected here in terms of how many public servants were assisted with assistive devices is not high enough, but it's a start. This was not there before. Every time you raise the issue, they say, but it's a very costly exercise. But if you look at the figures, you'll see that it's actually not very hard. It's possible. And the difference it makes in the life of that particular employee who could not function effectively and therefore could not be retained in the public services. It's massive. So we're hoping that with the workshop that we continue to run, and now in the workshops it's not just talking about the policy, it's talking about good practices, because we've seen other departments, they are able to do this, they have been able to spend money on assistive devices. Look at the amount compared to the numbers. I was just doing average calculation there. It's less than 25,000 average per person. Now that is not a lot of money to make a difference in the life of this employee. Will also make a difference in the function of the department across the country. I think CFO will run out of time here, but since one second.
Thanks, Chair. The 7% spent on disabilities, which is actually 2.3% spending on the disabilities, basically one of the reasons is on slide number 49, you indicated the 2.7 million, which is for the Education Commission of Disabilities. So what happens is that money can't touch it, but it can touch the commission as well. So that's part of the underspending. Another reason is that goods and services that are rendered during March, just before we close on the 31st of March, some of the invoices you will receive just towards the end of the meeting of March month, which then will then be processed in April. And some of the invoices you will actually receive in April. So once you receive those invoices in April, they will fall under the budget for the new financial. So hence that will give you a bit of understanding under that. But there's no rollover request that has been
thank you so much, DM.
We
wanted to hear your voice, that's fine. Thank you so much, DPSA. That will bring us to, is there any other follow-up questions, honorable members and comments before we close DPSA? Thank you so much. That will bring us to NSG. NSG, please follow the pattern which you highlight. Challenges, if there are any, in terms of the predetermined objectives that you have not performed for the year 15-16, the financial spending patterns, And if there are areas of disagreement with the Treasury, which are those ones, how do we intend to mitigate those ones so that we are at par? And also if there are any issues that would have raised on the MPAD report that we need to focus on as the NSG, as it may. And also probably because we are dealing with the BRRR, that we are fine with the money, we are happy, and then we can close the shop and go all of us to school.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. DG, I mean.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues, Chairperson and team of the Public Service Commission. We will be following
I did make a mistake. Welcome to the table. Probably the chair, do you want to make an opening remarks before we do the actual presentation?
No.
No, I'm guessing they are still an actor. I apologize. No, it's who was? Now I know. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. At least we're smiling in my own expense.
Okay. yes, we will also add an item to the slide on the current budgeting situation to consider as well. Just in terms of the key message here is that the National Development Plan does commit South Africa to building an efficient and effective public service capable of delivering services to the vulnerable population. And the importance of building a culture of learning in order to deepen the professionalization of the public service. The National School of Government does have to play a central role in the professionalization of the public service in supporting the building of a capable developmental state through its learning and development initiatives and interventions which are possible across various spheres of government. The ministerial directives on induction, as well as the SMS capacity development, place the NSG at the center of mandatory training. We also put a lot of effort into building international partnerships, in which the work of the school, as well as the quality of public service, and we do have partnership initiatives on the African continent with the Chinese Academy of Governance and the newly emerging ones of the American University, as well as the French École Nationale de l'Administration. In terms of our highlights from the 2015-16 financial year, we piloted self-paced, free and open online learning. And the value of online learning is the openness of the content. It can reach a lot of learners in a short time. It is ideal for compliance training and learners take responsibility for their own learning. The added advantage, of course, is that public servants are not removed from the workplace and they can late afternoon, devote an hour or two to going through the exercises and quizzes which are presented in an online program. So it is, it has advantages in terms of cost efficiency and maintaining productivity while training occurs. The interesting thing about the pilot, which was on a performance management course as well as a 1 million people went into the site to look at what's on offer, it is demonstrating that there is a huge potential for us to realize through e-learning. At the same time, we did take in 18,586 learners as part of the online program, as well as 6,594 learners as part of the online communities of practice. So that this substantially raised the access we gave to public servants to learning opportunities, and combined with other face-to-face and facilitated e-learning, a total of 55,904 learners accessed learning and development opportunities through the LMC during 2015. Cabinet also approved a strategy for the use of retired and serving public servants as facilitators in the LMG. And this helps us to enable public servants to add value to the public service by imparting their experience, their expertise, their skills and knowledge to mentor and coach public servants. The initiative is picking up pace, and we've had interest from a number of former DGs who have now retired who will be participating in our executive induction program, which will be rolling out for the remainder of this financial year. We also prepared the way for collaboration and partnership with local government through an engagement with SALGA, which began during the 2015-16 year and culminated in the signing of a memorandum of understanding and the support which we have given to SALGA in the counselor induction program in order to capacitate local governments. The executive induction program, which is developed by the NSG, is aligned to the directive on compulsory capacity development, mandatory training days, and minimum entry requirements for senior management service, which was approved by the Cabinet in October 2014. And the program targets heads of departments at levels 15 and 16 at both national and provincial tiers of government. The signing of a four-year memorandum of understanding to formalize the partnership between the Chinese Academy of Governance and the National School of Government on the 30th of October 2015 is aimed at strengthening exchanges and cooperation in the fields of education, training, and development. We have already trained about 30 public servants through this partnership, and in the coming financial year, we will be developing a joint curriculum, which over time will allow us to increase the number of public servants who are able to access these opportunities. We also signed an MOU with the Namibian Institute of Public Administration and Management in September 2015, and we are collaborating around a regional program for the SADC region, which will be financed by the African Development Bank, and this will be a workshop on good governance and strategic procurement for the SADC region. We've also concluded the approval of the EU development support for an amount of 10 million euros over a five-year period, which will assist the NSG to implement public service training and capacity building program for increased public sector capacity through learning and development. It will, in certain program areas, also apply, give us the opportunity of accessing additional funding where funding is not available, including for the training of unemployed graduates, which currently is not funded, and in our current fiscal squeeze situation, it's difficult for us to roll out as we intend and plan. In terms of our overall performance, we set ourselves 27 performance targets, and we achieved 17, and I will go through the detail of this. Program one, administration. Here we just give some areas where we have achieved or are slightly underachievement. But in any event, what's important here is that a total of 22 internal new and existing policy to develop. We do require, in terms of compliance, to review our policies on an ongoing basis. These are internal policies related to human resource management, development, financial management, facilities and logistics management, and communications. We were able to reduce the vacancy rate to 10.5% by the end of the financial year, which was down from 15.4% in the last financial year, where there was a moratorium on new appointments in place. We also reduced the debt recovery book value from 34.7 or 8 million to 16.5 million in 2015-16. And the recovery of debt continues to be a challenge for the NSG, with an average of 70 days taken to collect payments due. Now, obviously, if we are treated by the model which we are forced to operate on as a business operation, then we should be getting payments within 30 days, like all departments are supposed to do to other entities. So, obviously, this is one of our challenges. We also successfully implemented the ICT disaster recovery solution, and we obtained approval for people to fully manage the virtual private network and that backup. This slide indicates where we have not been able to meet specific targets. The first relates to implementation of the service delivery improvement plan. So although we didn't achieve it during 15-16, it is now achieved and completed. Then also the MPAT results, we set ourselves targets in terms of scoring four. So we've implemented an improvement plan. I think one of the challenges we have found with MPAT, and discussed these in the governance and administration cluster, is that the capacity within GPME to implement at the same level of rigor of the Auditor General simply does not exist. So there's too much inconsistency between the years. And the actual methodologies which lead to the findings are certainly not as rigorous as those of the Auditor General. So we try to feed some constructive criticism into the process in order to improve it. We set ourselves a target of implementing a communication policy strategy and corporate identity manual. We have developed a comprehensive communications, marketing, and branding strategy, but it was not approved by the close of the previous financial year. The NSG business architecture plan, we completed phase one. So the environmental assessment in terms of reference for the service providers was drafted and adopted by the ICT steering committee, but that was not completed by the end of the financial year. And the reduction of the vacancy rate to 10%, I've already indicated that it was reduced to 10.5%. We also had some outstanding tasks on our infrastructure and facilities management plan. We achieved 89% against the 90% target that we set. So that's also where we fell short. Program two, public sector organizational and staff development. We completed a number of research projects, and we undertook 21 training needs analysis, which was far above target. Now, these we believe are extremely useful compared with the workplace skills plans, which departments have to do for compliance purposes. And we believe we could add more value here if we were able to ramp these up in terms of departments having a better understanding of their training needs. And probably we could also, given the fact that we are a cost recovery entity, look at charging something in the future in order to assist with the trading accounts. We also did a number of evaluations, 108 on-site evaluations and 4 application of learning studies. We designed on learning and development facilitators, moderators, and assessors. And out of these, we recontracted 153 independent facilitators. And we continue to maintain our accreditation status for the period 1st of February 2016 to 31st March 2018 by the Public Service Education Training Authority. The next slide goes into details of the performance against the targets relating to training. These are obviously the targets that the committee would be most interested in. And what we see is that we had a target across the leadership, management, administration, and induction streams of 60,000. And through facilitated learning, we didn't make those targets. But with the piloting of the online programs, we considerably increased the number of people that we gave training opportunities access to. And we do believe that going forward, we need to focus very much, and we have specific programs. We are working with Treasury, for example, on a delegation accreditation program, which we believe can be done online and should ultimately be a requirement for delegation effects of PMMA to be allocated or issued to officials at different levels of the system. So I think the slide shows that we are struggling particularly with the induction program, and we'll give more information around this on the revenue implications. But we also going to talk to that in a minute now when we go to our next slide, which looks at the targets not achieved in terms of program two. On the compulsory induction program, like I've indicated, we have taken a number of measures and we continue to take measures trying to improve our performance in terms of the compulsory induction program. We set up a project management unit where we brought in trainers on contract who are dedicated to training on the induction program. And we also are rolling out the Rutanang Maafrika, which is the utilization of public service program in order to support the PIPs by training trainers across the country, crediting them, and then scheduling training sessions which they run. We have also now allocated up to 26 additional trainers full-time for the remainder of the financial year to ensure that we are able to cover up on the outstanding numbers who need to train in terms of the target set. So we are pulling out all the stops to try and slay this dragon, I will call it that, which is the induction, compulsory induction program. And I'm hoping that we will, by the end of the financial year, and indeed when we make our third quarterly report, be able to report some better news on this particular program. On the leadership, management, and administration, the real challenge we have is that we are a public service department. We operate a trading entity, and the core business is run on the basis of cost recovery. A public service department is not geared to be a business entity. We do not have a sales division. We need to have a key account management function in this organization so that we can go out to departments with knowledge of their training needs and requirements and sell them our programs. We still have to bid on the basis of free quotes and compete with private sector entities and other entities that provide training within public service space. And we believe that we should be exempt from that requirement if we have to operate on the basis on which we are operating, so that departments can create and simply contract us without us issuing quotes. We issue huge numbers of quotes, and these are often amount of funds which are allocated across the board by the National Treasury to national and provincial departments, and then look at that in relation to the amounts allocated to us. But if we are to make a success of the current model, we would need to have a sales capacity. The National Treasury appears sympathetic to this request, and they were quite excited about the idea, but they have not allocated them additional funds for the period of the medium term budget policy that they do. We did not get additional funding for that, but I will explain the additional funding we did get. We also did not train the full complement of unemployed youth rate graduates. Now, this is an area which sort of shows the limitation of the cost recovery. If we're going to train unemployed youth graduates, we cannot expect those people to pay for the training courses that we provide. It's a five-day program. It provides unemployed graduates with knowledge of the public service, how to apply, helps them to write up their CVs. It is seen as a very useful program, and we would like to roll this out at a huge scale, but without funding. And the funding that we need would be, for example, for those attending the course to have something to eat during the course of the day. We are convinced that venues in townships, we can get those without any payment, but we do need at least to feed the people who come to the program. And in any event, we are developing a funding strategy. I think in the interim, while we sort some of these things out, once the EU funding comes on stream, we will utilize that funding for the program. We also did not meet our target on learner records in terms of capturing them on time. There are a lot of improvements and enhancements we need to make for the induction program as a whole. And this includes the verification of learners. We actually do train more people than we ultimately verify because of the slow process.
So, Prof, we are left with no minutes, but to wrap up.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
All right, then I will go through the remainder of the presentation quite quickly. We received an unqualified audit report. We did not request an environment. There was an amount of 38,000 incurred as irregular expenditure. The approval during the 14-15 financial year. But they were condoned because the NSC did not suffer financial loss. And all payments were processed within 30 days of receiving the notice. So this just shows the financial performance overview and the fact that we expended 98% voter funds. This is for the voter accounts. On the trading side, the trading entity was established in terms of PFMA, which operates the trading account. We also received an unqualified audit report. This is for the 8 year running. There was an amount of 249,000 in terms of regular expenditure. It was condoned. Also approved during the 14-15 years. Again, in terms of the trading account, all payments were processed. This just gives an indication, and I think if you look at this under revenues, you look at the second item, that is the real challenge of the NSC, is that the approved budget in terms of cost recovery through court fees was 143.6 million, and we recovered 60 million. So it's clear that the model has not been affected by the organization. On the side of HR, we have a slide which shows the total number of posts, 227, the vacancy rate, 49 SMS posts, 45 were filled by the end of the financial year, so the vacancy rate at senior management level is only 8.2%. The employment equity, the NSG has 80 males and 123 females. There are 5 employees with disabilities, representing 2.5% of the NSG employment. So on the employment equity side, the NSG does have a challenge right now. We have also maintained strong corporate governance with risk management and compliance reports developed. We have outsourced the internal audit function. We had a change in service provider with a strong mandate to begin to build internal audit capacity so that over time we are able to take over this function. We going to very briefly as requested give some preliminary results. And this is at the end of quarter two. These basically show firstly the amount that we received on the vote, which was 55 million. We have reported on this before, and the Treasury basically instructed us to utilize our reserves for the remainder of the budget. The reserves were calculated at the point at which the cut was made rather than the end of the financial year. So we ultimately did get an additional allocation of 16 million to the adjusted estimates to make good that difference. On the trading account, I think there is relatively good news here in the sense that although we have only recovered around 50 million out of a budgeted amount of 150 million, it's 50 million as against 60 million for the entire previous financial year. So it shows that we have managed through various interventions to strengthen the cost recovery side of the operation, but clearly it's the induction program where we're having the full-scale intervention now that we would need to make the difference on. In conclusion, I think the point we want to make here is that the total allocation to national and provincial departments for human resource development is 4 billion rand. Okay, so 7% of that is our budget. We calculate what our budget is against that, which includes the voted funds and cost recovery. We're looking at 7% of that amount, roughly. And the question remains, is would it not be better to simply top slice that 7%? Each department takes a 7% cut on human resource development allocation, and then the NSG is required to provide a suite of programs. It seems that that may be an alternative way of doing things. And the main problem, like I say, is the NSG is set up in terms of operating model to function as a business entity, but really it is a public service department, the same ranks and levels. So if we say we want to do sales, for example, there's no mechanism in the Public Service Act that would allow us to incentivize salespeople who would help us, key account managers who would help us to sell our courses, simply because it does not exist. And that provides us with a number of challenges to make the operating model work properly. Certainly the partnership with SALDA and state-owned entities will ensure that we have a more meaningful footprint across the public sector. We were involved in the training of about 312 facilitators for the compulsory induction program for counselors, which reached almost 10,000 counselors, and ultimately we would also take stock of those numbers. But certainly on the cost recovery or revenue side, the amount would be quite low for the participation that we made in that particular initiative. The pilot on online learning indicates a huge potential for the NSG to become a very strong player within e-learning domestically and internationally. And we are also, through international partnerships, raising the profile of the NSG to the point where the African Development Bank has indicated an interest in working with us in the sub-region as well as more broadly across the continent. Thank you very much, and sorry about this.
Thanks, Prof. CFO, you want to say something around the financials?
Yes.
that the prof would not necessarily have covered?
I think prof has covered it with the second quarter performance on the work side. We've actually spent 75% of the current year's budget.
The one that they've just gone through it quickly.
Yes, on this one as well, this is on the trading account. The revenue, we didn't receive any transfer funds from the government.
One second, you are aware, CFO, that we're dealing with 2015-16, but I'll allow DM to say something, please. One second, we'll come back to you.
I was just going to ask, why are we second quarter results when we're still going to come back to the full committee to report on this? I thought what we're dealing with here was the annual report.
Yes, it was requested earlier on to say we must add some of where we are with our budget for the current year, so we accommodated that request. The first slide also spoke to the prior year.
Okay. No. Proceed, Leslie. No, you can proceed. Let's leave it.
On the financial for the prior year.
I'm sure. I think so.
We only have a small saving of 2.8 million, which means we spent the 98% of the allocated budget. Then on the trading account, because of the challenges we prof has already explained, we're not able to raise the money that we wanted. We only raised 60 million from the trading fees, which meant that we had an issue with our reserves. And we had a discussion with Treasury, we ended up with a loss. That's why they now eventually gave us an additional 15.9 million as additional allocation.
And where are your classes today? No, that's fine. Let's leave it. thanks, NSG, for the presentation for 2015-16. Honorable members, now it's up to us to engage or make comments. And Honorable Velma, not yet ready. Okay. You have to take a walk towards the mic somewhere here. Thanks, here.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you very much. I will go through slide by slide. Slide 4, the online learning. I would like to congratulate you with the big numbers. I'm just curious, are people with disabilities included in that? And do you know what the number is? The CFO just mentioned, I just want clarity on this. Do you mean at the end of the last financial year that we are discussing, there was a loss of 40 million, but you said recently that Treasury assisted with 50 million. So is there still a loss for the previous financial year? I want clarity on that. And then I see on slide 20, employment equity. Also applauding you again, meeting the 2% target. We're above that by 0.5. But can you maybe just explain to us which occupational band do you find the people with disabilities? I'm hoping that it's not only the lower income and the cleaners and all of that. So I'm hoping that it's top management as well, or high level management as well. So that's all. I also like to congratulate you on your annual report. At least is clear on the number of disabilities. It's very clear, so I can see instead of coming with zeros like some of the departments. And I think some of the departments can actually learn from you too. So thank you very much for that.
Okay. No, we will note the comments and questions, Honourable. Yes, thank you so much, Mare. Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think 17 college out of 27 is not something that any entity can be put to the ground.
Honorable Mtau, the member wants to see my face.
Perhaps even more ambitious in setting up targets. When you have such huge outstanding debts, and it comes down dramatically as we've seen, one way of achieving that would be to write off some of those debts as irrecoverable. If we could just find out what has been the amount of irrecoverable debts in the north. Then, secondly, when you report on the online courses, can you, I have a bit of an education background myself. There's a difference between website hits and successfully completing a program up to the certification phase. If we could just be informed of how many people have successfully completed that online program. And lastly, can you give us an indication of how many of your qualifications that you've issued have been registered on the National Learner Database? Because looking from the view of the Department of Higher Education and Training, that is actually what we want to achieve. We want to build up a formal record of qualified people in this country on certified courses, people that can then, when they apply, and you want to cross-check their CVs, that you can then go to SAQUA and the National Learner Database and say, well, are these accredited courses? What are the contents of these courses? So that they could respond to those questions, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Another
stuff? Thank you, Chair. I couldn't help, hearing the deep lament from the NSG about what I can only describe as an unlevel playing field in terms of funding, in terms of people approaching the school just to get quotations when they know they're not being funded in the school. And I'm just wondering, given the sense that you're giving this committee that you would like some intervention by the government to make it easier for the school to be able to fund itself or its programs, that you applied your mind to discourage the departments from asking for quotes just to fulfill their compliance thing in terms of maybe asking for a non-refundable fee that they would have to pay if they were to get a quote from you and stuff like that. I'm mentioning this because that would probably be the one thing that we'd have to consider. But my fear is that every upside has a downside. The downside would be the school would become quite complacent and not be as rigorous as we would like it to be in terms of funding itself and making sure that it can break even. Just your comment on that.
Thank you. Honorable Mare?
Sure.
Oh.
Okay.
She'll cover you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you so much to you, for the presentation to the CFO. I think we need to change the NSG business particular plan. It has to change. I'm going to touch slightly on what my colleague has touched on, Honorable Stephen, about accreditation and affiliation. No one can join your entity with an aim to get a paper that I have successfully completed a particular induction or a particular module. As a result, I've got the certificate. No one is going to do that because a certificate is more like a key that opens a door for you to be able to go to a particular level. Now, if you look at our entity, which it is supposed to be the unique, especially the disability unit, but we need to change the plan itself. The plan is just not on. It is worse when they go for e-learning. You can't say a child, you give birth to a child, and your child is crawling And while you are taking 2 days of calling, you expect this child to walk. So the milestones then are being jumped. Definitely at the end of the day, you will regress. And that's exactly what is happening with the NSG. So that is the first thing that I think the committee needs to look at it with the second quarter. Where is the difference? Because, like what one of my colleagues said, how do you set yourself 27 targets based on what? And then at the end of the day, they've got a deficit. So in other words, you take your own self, you throw your own self in the middle of the sea, you are going to sink. But the unfortunate thing is that when you sink, you don't sink alone, you sink with so many people. So let's get that. The four streams of training, those four streams of training, are they accredited? Is it possible that you can be affiliated to any of the universities so that at the end of the day, we issue certificates and we market ourselves? Now, you're saying your market strategy was wonderful and you want the NSG to be business-like model. It doesn't marry the two. The two concepts don't marry one another. You must have a strategy which is attractive to anybody, that our own department, those four streams, they must be so attractive that automatically somebody sitting at helm says, you know what, I've employed 4 people, 10 people, let them go to the NSG. So because that is not happening within its own home, it can't happen with any other person. I think the issue of procuring, submitting 3 quotes, I hear that. But you know why it is happening? Well, because maybe the people, they feel that you don't have teeth. Try and put something, even if it's faulty or what is other thing people are missing. We must have something so that we buy, so that at the end of the day, we can continue to succeed, continue to development, continue the resources, we'll be able to fill the position, we'll be able to drop the level of, you can see the effectiveness that can be done by that energy, but it needs to change its business activity if it does not come. Next time, because of we are in this space and we have to pay a lot of money, next time, CFO, when you bring, you might also bring the trading account as is next time for the financial year 2015-2016. Thank you,
thank you, honorable members. For me, I would say probably with the issues of financial issues, probably as this committee, we might need an audience with treasurer so that we can better understand and see how best can they assist us in terms of the trading account. But having said that, probably we need a policy shift somewhere. And I'll request that DM, through your department, can we look at that and see how best can we regularize them so that they can have that unit as a fully fledged a business unit as it may, so that they can also conduct their business in terms of income generating vehicle as it may. The other one, Prof, which I think you need to work on it, the issue of your certified or recognized certificates as it may, so that a person that has undergone through your school can also use as part of the CV those, because I think there are certain requirements that you need to meet. If you can pay attention to that, probably it's the other reason. I'm not saying I know the reason, but I'm just thinking aloud that probably is the reason why the other departments, they don't see you as the preferred training institution as it may. But also the other one, TM, in terms of the policy shift, we need to look and put our brains, we do have legal fundings within the government that can assist us to say, how do we make sure that departments, they go firstly as a preferred training service provider, our own NSG, before they go outside. I know the issue of pricing and that becomes a matter, but if you do that, the second one linked to the financials also is the your debt recovery strategies, it may, following up for the question that whether we have written them off, those monies or what happened. but also the notion, DM, that we need to look at, which I'm sure the DG of DPSA should also assess, is the issue of the 30 days payment of service providers. Even the inward, within the government, that should be applicable. And there is something wrong if that is not happening and it's not followed up aggressively. We can assist as a committee, but after you approach us seeking our assistance, to ask those departments who are still owing you, so that we take the same approach as other for private entities, as it may. DM, I'm not too sure whether I would like to say something.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the issue that has been raised by the DG of Public Service and Administration on learnerships and how far we are, NSG also brings into the discussion the fact that it has orientated 2,750 unemployed youth graduates. And we also spoke about the amount of time it takes to fill positions within the public service. But we must also understand that, and I'll just give you one practical example. We had advertised some years ago for a DPG and service delivery in the department. And we got a traffic officer shortlisted at some point. We got a branch manager of, I'm not sure what it was, Ackerman Pest Falls at some point. And the only reason why that would happen is because of the way in which our people are prepared to respond to these incidents. Also within the country. And I think what NSG could help in this orientation, because I heard the DG saying that part of what they do is to help them to craft their CVs, which would mean getting them ready for the work market and enabling them to be competitive. We also have a directive that says, let us use Vuk'uzenzele and such like platforms to advertise these positions that exist within the public service. But I must also say that notwithstanding the problems of the SABC has a public announcement responsibility. And it should be utilized to assist in some of these things. We've had people coming to us saying that they would be able to assist, because a lot of the time when people come back from work or the unemployed during the day have nothing really to entertain them in the form of, well, not entertain, to educate them and prepare them for the work environment. And the money that we spend on all of this could be pumped towards that as part of the SABC public announcement responsibility, which then would go to all of the radio stations that people listen to throughout the day. But also, when people want to watch television, they should be able to open onto a channel that would assist them. But also the platform of Parliament in communication, some of the radio communications earlier on. This is the perfect communications platform for our people. We might not even need huge budgets to communicate with our people. But these platforms, like plenaries, even the portfolio committees, because sometimes we have the media here, these are the perfect platforms to communicate achievements of government, but also the failures of government, and how it is that we're going to mitigate against some of these failures, if there are failures. But I think let's try and involve as much as possible the general public when we come to these platforms, and not rely on newspapers, rely on other forms of media communications, because Parliament in itself is just a perfect platform to engage our people on what it is that we're doing as a government and also what it is that we're unable to do as a government. But also using other, I mean, if you have the Channel 408, that is able to give so much information, how much of that goes down to the general public who do not have access to DSTV for them to learn about the work of Parliament and also the performance of government departments? So I think from I'm throwing this at MPs to say, let's look at utilizing this platform effectively so that it can reach our people. But also in some of the things that we want to do as well, let's also use the SABC. And I'm not advocating for the problems of the SABC. But let the SABC be useful in educating our people, because I think that we can do. Our responsibility as MPs is to hold it accountable, and let's do that. But let's use that platform to also educate our people.
Thank you so much, DM. Because DM, by the way, when we're on recess, the 408 also is on recess. Prof, do you want to respond and probably in a very summary way, if it's possible? Because other issues that would have been recommendations will be also be factored in your 2017-18 business plan, as it may.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, honourable members, for the questions. Very briefly, honourable Velma, out of five employees with disabilities, which is 2.5%, 20% are from SMS, 20% are from middle management, and 60% are from level 1 to 8. Numbers of people trained, we don't have that number offhand. Perhaps it's a number we should look for. And perhaps we could also, if it's possible, look for the number of people with disabilities who have accessed the online learning opportunity as well. I think there is a big discussion required, which is we don't have the time for it now, about I've given an example of the way we want to go in online training. Give people accreditation for their delegation. I don't understand the value of having that course accredited as such. It's a very practical, hands-on course which will make sure that people understand their roles and responsibilities within delegation under the PFMA. It's not an imperative to accredit a course like that, in my opinion. It's a discussion. I'm not, asserting a dogmatic position, but I don't think that is what one wants to get out of it. So I'm neither for accreditation nor against accreditation per se. I see the value for certain learners of having accredited programs is very important. I think when we operate in the local government terrain, when we operate in the parliamentary, national, provincial and even councillor terrain, I think it's very important that the programs we offer are accredited so that there's a clear learning and qualifications path. But there are members of the public service, for example, in the FMS, who are highly qualified, and we need to make sure that they can apply their foundational knowledge in the workplace. So I think that's where the discussion needs to be, but those are the numbers I have at the moment. Most of our programs, overwhelming majority, are accredited. And certainly, wherever possible, we do move for accreditation. I think a very big question is, if we had a policy shift and there was top slicing of the budget, so if they took 5% or whatever and gave it to the NSG, will it lead to complacency? Well, I think that is a real question. But I think there are other mechanisms that a public service institution like ours could utilize to ensure that there isn't complacency, as opposed to the market. But I think business side can also diminish quality. We just end up going where we can get the money and cover the cost. So I think the policy shift does need to be considered, and I'll just ask the CFO to deal with the question that we're asking very quickly.
On the issue of the loss, yes, the loss is definitely there. For the 15, 16 years, the additional funding that we received, the 16.9 million, is to help us even there reduce our budget for the 16, 17 financial year because of the reserve. But we're showing them that the reserve has already been used to cover the loss that we had in previous years. Outstanding debt, we didn't do much write-off in the 15, 16. On page 204 of the annual report, there's a note on the write-off. We only had 36,000 write-off because as a principal, we do not write off debt when we've supplied goods for them, when we've done the training. So National Trader is assisting us in trying to recover the debt that is owed to us. The reason why there was a big change with that is because in July 2016, we started implementing prepayment for training. A lot more departments accepted the prepayment. Some of them haven't accepted that. So that has helped us in reducing that debt to the level that we are seeing now. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, NSG. The other one that I would request you moving forward is your relationship with the NYDA, the young graduates, because they are also doing some work in that space. Having said that, members and DM and colleagues, may we break for 5 minutes according to my watch and then we reassemble here within 5 minutes. The tea is ready outside, I'm advised. Thank you.
Just that collaborator, they don't hang it.
Yeah.